Welcome to the Church History Series here on the Enduring Word YouTube channel. My name is Lance Ralston. I'm one of the content creators here at Enduring Word. This episode is the last in our series, The Long Road to Reform. People of the 21st century are so accustomed to thinking of Italy as a large, unified nation that it's difficult to conceive of it as it was throughout most of its history. A patchwork of various regions, often at odds with each other. During the Middle Ages and a good part of the Renaissance, Italy was composed of powerful city-states like Florence and Venice and Genoa, which vied endlessly with each other. Exacerbating the turmoil was the interference of France and Germany, ever angling to influence affairs to their advantage. This mix of prosperity, intrigue, and emerging new ideas brought tremendous pressure to bear on the papacy in the last decades of the 15th century. I need to insert a cautionary footnote at this point. As this is the last of our series laying out the history of why the Reformation occurred, we need to deal with something that may be a bit unsettling for some. This period that we're looking at saw a number of popes who were, well, let's just say that they were less than holy men dedicated to God's glory. Even many loyal Roman Catholics acknowledge that some of the men who have ridden Peter's chair were of less than sterling reputation. They were a curse to the Holy See. That there was a string of them in the 15th century helped set the stage for the Reformation. And I hope this mini-series inside the Church History series here on the Enduring Word YouTube channel has made it clear that reform only became something outside the Roman Church when the decades-old movement for reform within it was forced to exit. Never forget that Luther and other reformers began as Roman monks or priests who were forced out. During his reign in the mid-15th century, Pope Eugene IV sought to decorate Rome with the new artistic styles of the early Renaissance. He recruited Fra Angelico and Donatello. This began a trend among the popes to imbibe the ideas of the Renaissance, especially as it regarded art. They sought to adorn Rome with palaces, churches, and monuments that were worthy of its place as the capital of Christendom. As scholarship became increasingly popular, some popes enlarged the Vatican's library immensely. Now, all of this construction wasn't cheap, especially the work on St. Peter's Basilica. So, the popes came up with new ways to raise funds. That's a subject that we'll come back to later as it becomes, well, one of the main sparks that lit the fires of Reformation. Not all Renaissance popes focused on the arts. Some were warlords who led military campaigns. Others took delight in playing the high-stakes game of political intrigue. Eugene IV was succeeded by Nicholas V, who spent his term from 1447 to 55 trying to gain political dominance over the Italian states. His goal was to turn Rome into the intellectual center of Europe. He recruited the best authors and artists. His personal library was unrivaled across Europe. But being a scholar didn't preclude him being brutal. He ruthlessly pursued and executed any who opposed him. It was during his reign that Constantinople fell to the Turks. He called for a great crusade to retake the city, but everyone knew he really only wanted to increase his own prestige, and so they pretty much ignored him. His successor was Calixtus III, who served only 3 years. Calixtus was the first pope of the Spanish family of Borgia. Under the guise of standing against an invasion by the Turks, Calixtus embarked on a campaign to unite Italy by military conquest. Nepotism reached a new height during his reign. One of the many relatives that Calixtus elevated was his grandson, Rodrigo, whom he appointed as a cardinal. This Rodrigo would later become the infamous Alexander VI. The next pope was Pius II, who served from 1458 to 64. Pius was the last of the Renaissance popes who took his office seriously. He tried to bring about the much-needed reformation of the church, but his plan was stalled by powerful cardinals. Pius was a true scholar who began work on a vast cosmography. Unable to complete the work before he died, it was instrumental in shaping the ideas of a certain Genovese ship's captain named Cristoforo Colombo, known to school children everywhere as Columbus, who in 1492 sailed the ocean blue. Now, Pius II was followed by Pope Paul II, an opportunist who, upon learning that his uncle, Eugene IV, had been made pope, decided a career as a churchman, well, that was more promising than his occupation as a tradesman. His main interest was collecting jewelry. His lust for luxury was proverbial. His concubines were acknowledged by the papal court. Pope Paul wanted to recover the architectural glory of pagan Rome and devoted vast sums to the work. He died of internal bleeding brought on by his debauchery. Sixtus IV served from 471 to 84 and came to power by literally buying the papacy. Corruption and nepotism reached new heights. His sole aim was to enrich his family, one of whom would become Pope Julius II. Now, under Sixtus, the church became a family business, and all Italy was involved in a series of wars and conspiracies, really, whose sole purpose was just to enrich the Pope's nephews. His favorite nephew was Pietro, who at the age of 26 was made a cardinal, the Patriarch of Constantinople, and the Archbishop of Florence at 26. Another nephew of Sixtus plotted the murder of one of the Medicis in Florence, who was stabbed to death before the altar while saying Mass. When the dead man's relatives took revenge by hanging the priest who murdered him, the Pope excommunicated the entire city of Florence and declared war. Despite all these grotesque shenanigans, history remembers Sixtus for something entirely else, the Sistine Chapel, which was named after him. Before his election in 1484, Innocent VIII made a solemn vow to end the nepotism that had become endemic to the papacy. But as soon as he was the pope, he renounced that. Since papal power was supreme, he wasn't bound by his prior oath. Now, what's the phrase? It's good to be the king. Apparently, it's good to be the pope. Innocent VIII wasn't innocent, that is. He was the first pope to acknowledge several of his illegitimate children on whom he heaped honors and wealth. Under the administration of his son, the sale of indulgences became a shameless money-making scheme. Pope Innocent ordered Christendom to be cleared of all witches, and as a result, hundreds of innocent women were executed. After Innocent's death, Rodrigo Borgia bought the cardinal's votes and became pope under the name of Alexander VI. He ruled from 1492 to 1503. Now, under Alexander, papal corruption probably reached its all-time zenith. Or we should say probably its nadir. I hope that any Roman Catholics watching or listening don't assume that I'm just Catholic bashing here. Catholic scholars chronicle all of this. It's simply a sad chapter in church history. Now, Pope Alexander was a moral wretch who publicly committed all the capital sins except gluttony, and only then because of a persistent heartburn. Savonarola, who we covered in an earlier episode, he said of Pope Alexander that he was a, quote, pockmarked whore sitting on Solomon's throne. All right, then, might help explain why Savonarola met such a fiery end. Alexander had numerous affairs with the wives of the men of his court. These women gave him several children that he openly acknowledged. The most famous of them were the infamous pair Caesar and Lucretia. Now, Italy was besmirched by blood because of Pope Alexander's many plots and wars. His court was so corrupt that many fabricated tales were hatched. Sad, since there was no need to embellish the list of sins attached to his reign, which for long after hurt the reputation of the papacy. Alexander VI died unexpectedly. Suspicion is that he was mistakenly took a poison meant for someone else. His son Caesar had hoped to inherit the Holy See, but was struck by the same ailment. So the cardinals elected Pius III, who was supposed to be a reformer. He lasted just 26 days before dying mysteriously. Can anyone say conspiracy? This brought Julius II to the papal seat, a worthy successor to Alexander. When popes are elected, they pick a name that they want to take for their tenure as the head of the church. The papal name gives a hint for how the pope sees his role, really what he hopes to accomplish. Julius was only the second to take that name, a harbinger of what he aimed to do. Appointed a cardinal by his uncle, Sixtus IV, Julius modeled himself after Julius Caesar, not one of the saints. Like many of the popes of that era, Julius was a patron of the arts. During his pontificate, Michelangelo finished the Sistine Chapel, and Raphael's frescoes decorated the Vatican. But this pope's favorite pastime was war. Visitors to the Vatican today are struck by the bright colors of the Swiss Papal Guard. The only way that they could be called camouflage is if they were trying to hide in a Jackson Pollock painting. It was Julius who reorganized the Papal Guard, dressing them in uniforms said to have been designed by none other than Michelangelo. Now, we might expect a pope to make a poor general, but Julius was so successful in his military and diplomatic exploits that it was rumored he might finally achieve the unification of Italy. Of course, France and Germany opposed his plans, but Julius defeated them both in diplomacy and on the battlefield. He died in 1513, earning the epithet Julius the Terrible by his contemporaries. He was succeeded by Giovanni, the son of Lorenzo de' Medici. Giovanni took the name of Leo X, and like his famous father, Leo was a patron of the arts. He failed to consolidate Julius's military and political gains, and in 1516 was forced to sign an agreement with Francis I of France that gave the king enormous authority in church affairs. Leo's immersion in the world of the arts overshadowed his pastoral concerns. He was determined to complete St. Peter's in Rome. The financing of that project was the main purpose for the sale of indulgences that provoked the protests of a certain German monk named Martin Luther. Now, in our next episode, since we've now come right up to the Reformation in Europe, we're going to need to get caught up with the narrative of what's happening with the church in the East.